So the discipline is actually a byproduct of consistent, repeatable actions towards a specific outcome.
Wow.
Fundamentally, we need to realize that we have budgets are a goal. They're not a Bible. They're a goal. Mm. And we need to be flexible to see, this is my budget, this is my goal, and constantly review it. So that's what we want our listeners to understand, that we're trying to influence you to take that same pattern of behavior.
XS Chef Elhuzi, welcome back to a brand new episode of Seated with Lebo and Thato Rampedi. If you're new to the channel, we are in our breakthrough season. This year, we are doing one thing, and that's breaking through by fire, by fight.
Yeah.
We're making sure we become successful, that we become better versions of ourselves. And as you guys have seen in the past few episodes, we are bringing people onto the podcast every single week because we want to learn from our friends and learn from experts. And today's extra, extra special because we are unpacking budgeting, something that I have personally struggled with for many years.
And everybody knows.
Everybody knows.
Yeah, I stay struggling.
And it's all because the budget speech is coming up. And I know with me, like, guys, for many years, as someone who studied engineering and then went straight into creating content, every time I hear about the budget speech, I just hear about things from you and my dad, having no idea how it affects me, how it affects my relationship.
Which is everybody, I like to think. Like, a lot of people actually don't know what happens in the budget speech.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. So today, guys, we've got a gift for you. We came with a special guest, somebody who is well-equipped, has lots of knowledge when it comes to this thing. I'm going to do a proper introduction.
Yeah.
We are joined by someone who honestly makes finance look strong in every sense of the word. That's going to be a funny joke later.
Yeah.
I hope it lands.
You're planting a joke now.
I'm planting a joke. You're not meant to say planting the joke when you're planting a joke. I'm practicing. So we've got a senior communications manager at Sanlam. And when I say communications manager, I don't mean just sending emails. I mean developing, executing marketing strategies, campaign, communication, roadmap. She basically makes sure that we understand what's happening.
Yeah.
Right. And she's here to do that with Sanlam and the budget speech coming up. But most importantly, guys, I want, like, my purpose, I'm going to make sure that you guys leave here with a clear plan on how to budget better.
Yeah.
Like, we're going to unpack so many myths that have just been killing the youth, killing many like Gen Zs. And we're going to make sure that you guys know how to use your money properly and for things that actually align with yourself. She holds a BA in Communications and Media Studies from UNISA. Please correct me if I'm wrong with anything, right?
Yeah. Okay. She's like, tick, yeah, keep going.
Auditing.
Has sharpened her skills through programs at Harvard Business School, UCT Graduate Schools of Business, and Stellenbosch Business School. Tick, 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 tick. Come on.
There's one more left. He's missing the UFS.
Like, how old is she?
UFS.
So she's not just talking finance. She studied it properly. And then casually, outside of boardrooms and brand strategies, we are also sitting next to a power lifter.
Yeah, aka Captain America. Just saying. And we were actually having a conversation off cam about her powerlifting. And I'm gonna speak about that a little bit more in the podcast. But let's get straight into it.
So we've got this section in the podcast where we usually ask people like how they're doing, like, you know, where's your mental? How are you doing physically? And I think we can go into it.
Yeah.
But I'm going to prompt you guys with that section.
Oh, okay.
Right? I've been doing this thing where...
Yeah, I see you. I see he's using an iPad. Things are... We are up now.
The
things
man are, with the tablet.
Yeah.
So let's go into the section of...
How are you?
So before we talk numbers, let's go into the how are you section. What's one thing in your guys' lives right now that you just refuse to stop budgeting for?
You can go first. You can go first.
Because you were so scared, I want to know what you're going to say.
Okay, one thing that I actually just started budgeting for is, I know it sounds crazy, but my future children.
Oh, okay.
Because I read an article about, it was a school in KZN, it's a private school, and the fees is, I don't know if you guys know private school fees, it's like half a million, if I'm being honest.
Yeah.
So I was just saying to myself, I want to be equipped at least to like the start of my child's life. A family planning.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
That's one of the new things that I'm like, I need to.
Crazy. I saw a TikTok and this guy was saying that like if you put in 500 Rand into like S&P 500 in your early 20s, that'll pay for your school fees. I was even thinking, yo, should I start like a...
Yeah, like we're going to have kids and family one day, bro.
The Americans do it. What do they call it? It's called like a college fund or something.
It's college fund, yeah. It's like when you do...
But anyway, what's one thing you can't stop budgeting for?
other than the like all the compulsory stuff, yeah. like all the bills and everything else. Yeah, a very expensive thing that I absolutely have to have in my budget is my coach. I have a coach.
Yeah, oh, okay. Coach for powerlifting.
Coach, yes. Okay. So I mean, it comes at an expense, but I mean, if I want to do better. Yeah. I need an expert in my corner, so that's something that I spend on religiously.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of mine.
What about you? I was about to ask you.
Like,
besides, like, obviously, like...
I think for me, it's very business related. Like, I don't know if it's budgeting, but I have to make sure that I budget so that I can pay all of my salaries.
No, that's just
and my
working.
Rent and everything. Like,
but that is
like, I have to always make sure that my cash flow makes sense. We don't spend too much. Mm. Like, that's one thing that I always obsess over. And obviously, I'm trying to get a new... a big boy purchase. Mm. So I'm trying to get a big boy purchase. Obviously, I've been budgeting for that.
Wait, now what is this big boy purchase?
You know, give us a hint. You want to say a sound?
We want to judge or celebrate you.
Oh, okay.
just give us a hint.
I can give you a hint. Yeah. No. Let's keep watching the videos.
Subscribe.
So why do you think those things matter to you guys? Because I know with me, it's about like, obviously sustainability. And of course, like, lifestyle for the second one. But why do you focus so much on wanting to have a coach to train you and just put you in that state of being better?
Well, I think it speaks to my whole philosophy about all the other things I budget for. Like you're saying, you know, making sure your cash flow is right, making sure all your bills are paid, all your family members are taken care of. Having a coach helps me to be the version of myself that's going to be able to keep maintaining all the other things that I need to be responsible for.
Yeah.
Because the mental load can become so much for certain things that you're in pursuit of. So if I have someone in my corner, then they're sharing the mental load, they're giving me direction. So that's why it's so important for me.
That's so true. We always speak about the power of like community, even if it's just like one person, two other people, like joining you with what you're doing.
Yeah.
I want us to go into this section, but before that, like obviously I want to touch on something. So we're going to be speaking about love languages and how love languages actually tie into budgeting. This was your idea.
This is my idea. I was thinking about like, obviously we're going to have you and we're going to speak about how the budget speed obviously affects South Africans as a whole.
Yeah.
But I was thinking about like, where does budgeting derive from? And it derives from love. Like, what do you love? What do you care about? What do you...
When you said that, I was like, I'm like, that makes so much sense.
But you can take us.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. So I want us to debunking myths.
Yeah.
Things about the budget speech. Like I mentioned, I was one person who just, and I think I still am. I'm just one person who doesn't understand what's going on with the budget speech, right? I know that like, people come together and they talk about the country, but I don't know how it affects me.
Yeah.
For me, it just looks and feels so far-fetched for me. So my question to you, in simple terms, what is the national budget speech and who gives it?
The Minister of Finance gives the speech,
okay.
right?
That's a good, that's
so
a good
the one. Person in charge of managing all the money, just like you as the boss of an organization, you know, you're managing the budget. So here we have Minister Godongwana. He is managing the budget. What is the budget speech? And that's the fundamental, right? Yeah. And I think why it gets confusing is because there's so much detail in the budget, but what we want to know as the consumer is what is the purpose and what is the fundamental reason why we go through this exercise?
Yeah.
And what does it mean for me? Now, tomorrow is the State of the Nation address. The president will talk about what is the state of the nation in terms of what is his objectives, what did he achieve, what are some of the goals he wants to make happen. Then a couple of weeks later, a few days later, the budget speech happens to show how the money will be spent to align to those priorities and those
things. Also, it's linked to...
Yeah, so it usually follows on, right? So you have this picture of what are some of my priorities, what is my retrospective view of what has happened in the country, and where do I need to either improve or maintain or fix or change or anything like that. And then the budget will then align to those things. So the budget will go and look, okay, this is where we spent last year.
Yeah.
Did it meet the objectives that we had last year?
Yeah.
This is the areas in which we're struggling last year. So these are the measures that I can put in place to fix that. And that's essentially what the budget is doing relative to the goals or the state of the nation. And if you're bringing that home, that is what we need to do on a ground level, in a house, in a marriage, in a partnership, whatever the case is. These are my goals. These are my objectives. Yeah. This is the resources we have. How are we going to use them? How have we used them? And how can we use them better?
Yeah.
And that's what the budget speech is for.
Yeah. Yeah. I see how you're saying it's like, it's basically on a systematical level and then it comes down to the household. So now why should us everyday normal South Africans like even care about the budget speech? Like, how does it affect us?
For one, it gives exactly like I laid it out, it gives an example for a method of operation almost, right? Like even on a macro level, a country is reliant on money in and money out.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. You can only do...
Just like me.
You can only do it within your budget.
You can only do it within your budget. And when we do it outside of our budget, we create debt even on on an economic level. So South Africa has a huge amount of debt and we've been servicing that debt. We needed to bring it down. And then you see the minister making all these difficult decisions. I'm going to reduce spending here. I'm going to cut spending here. I'm going to collect extra money here so that I can reduce debt. Right, so that's what's happening on a macro level. So it's creating an example, a method of operation for us as a household. Secondly, those decisions that we make, because we live in that ecosystem, those decisions that are made at that level impact us to some degree.
Yes.
The cost of fuel, the cost of food, the taxes that we pay, the interest that we can earn, the interest that we pay on bonds and stuff. So those things cascade down to us and they will impact our budget naturally, right?
Yeah,
so we want to know, what are the decisions he's making on a macro level that could impact us on a micro level at our in our house? And then we want to take that information and say, okay, what choices do I now have within that scope and how do I manage it? So it's this cascading view of there's a decision being made, it impacts me. I need to take a decision, it impacts my family, and so on and so forth.
Yeah,
so that's how the budget impacts us on a, on a ground level.
A big example, I just want to quickly add, a big example would be obviously everyone is affected by that. And that was obviously increased like, for the past, I mean, couple of years, it was increased. And people, you know, people don't even know that it gets increased until we see it on, like, newspapers, et cetera. But the budget speech actually talks about these things. They talk about these interest rates.
People don't understand, like, what VAT actually is.
The value-added tax.
Because I know what it means. Like, I only really understood VAT, like, what is it? Early last year, because I was in a situation where I was VAT registered and it's like, I wasn't doing things properly.
Yeah.
Right? And then I realized that, okay, cool. If VAT goes up, that means that, basically means that the cost of things just go up.
Which means you need to budget for that.
Yeah.
People think VAT is a tip. You know, you give a tip to them.
Yeah.
But in reality.
But yeah, but just on that point, there was a good point you mentioned, because last year one of the biggest contentions was the fact that they were looking to increase VAT. Now, why were they looking to increase VAT? Because they needed to create additional revenue so there's more money in the budget so that they can spend it in other areas that needed that expenditure, right?
Yeah.
So they were trying to create it through something like VAT. But like you said, it has a knock-on effect because suddenly you're paying more for everything. So you're creating money through collecting it here, but then all the consumers are needing to budget to spend more because now there's a knock-on effect.
Yeah.
So even if you didn't understand what VAT was, realizing that a decision like that is going to impact your daily budget, that's where we want our consumers to get to.
Yeah.
To not get tripped up on the semantics or the specifics about that, but to understand that there are certain things like taxes and interest rates and things that immediately stretch your budget and or your rands. And once it does that, what are the choices that you have and what are the actions that you need to take? And that's why we're here, so that we can talk about what's in your control, how do you manage that, and how do you budget?
Oh, we really need that. I mean, I know that every time these things happen, like social media goes crazy. Like X, TikTok, Instagram, everyone goes crazy.
It goes, it's
and
like
everyone's just
fire.
Having conversations. What would you guys say are some misconceptions about the budget speech that are just like 100% wrong?
It looked like your opinion was forming and forming.
So, so misconceptions, right? Like one, the statements that are made in the budget speech, right? They're goals, right? That are being, they're going to try to uphold, but not necessarily, it doesn't always happen to that specific T.
Yeah.
So they may say, we want to invest in infrastructure of education, for example. And they say, well, they want to do, you know, how many millions, et cetera. But they might not reach that goal. And that's something that we as South Africans actually don't
understand.
That these things are just like goals and like, we're trying to achieve this and achieve that. Obviously they try to set it and et cetera, but it doesn't always go to the 100%.
That's a very good point. I agree with that. That's a huge and very valid point. I was actually listening to the news this morning when they're preparing for the State of the Nation, and they were reflecting on some of the things they said that money was going to be spent on in the budget last year. And you realize, if you're looking back, that it wasn't possible. We weren't able to reduce or employ 10,000 additional policemen. Yeah. That was a big goal, right?
Yeah.
It was a goal, and they had allocated a budget for it. But when it came to materializing, it wasn't possible. There wasn't money. And that's another learning, that, you know, you can set goals and it's important to do so. And it's important to reflect to see where did you miss the mark and how do you make reactive responses or proactive responses to that. But to your question, some of the things that people tend to think immediately when they listen to the budget speech is that policymakers are making decisions that are almost like a punishment. Like, you know, like sometimes you take it personally, you know?
Yeah.
And you don't blame them, because in the absence of fully understanding and understanding the parameters of which the minister has to work in, yes, there is corruption and all those things that are influencing it. But when, for example, when Minister Gonangwana took over, he took over a certain balance sheet and a budget and everything. He's looking at it now and he's thinking, what can I do with this?
Yeah.
You know, this is what I have. This is what I inherited. Mm. This is the money coming in. What can I do? So he's also working with a system that is
what he was given.
And he's making the most informed decision that he can make given what he has, right? So if we consider it in context of that, we start to think, okay, he's making decisions based on context. Now I too need to make decisions based on context, and as new information presents itself,
I
pivot with that new information, you know. But the minute you start to feel as if something is being imposed as a consequence to you, you get the sense of helplessness, and that helplessness causes us to make bad reactive decisions. Whereas if you understand things in context and you feel informed, you can make more educated decisions and proactive decisions. And I think that reframing is quite important to understand the budget speech.
Yeah. I really like that, like, POV to go and consume the budget speech, like go and watch it and see how they're applying the country, you know, and then apply what they're doing to your own life.
Mm.
Like, that's such a nice way to,
it's such like, a powerful lesson.
I feel like I'd enjoy it a whole lot more.
It's such
a
done.
10 minutes into the podcast, she's told us like the main mark. Like, that is so true though. It's so true. And like what you said about like, you're doing the best of what you received from the previous budget speech. Like that's real life. Context. Also, like we sometimes don't know what's going to happen. We sometimes set goals, but we don't achieve them. But we try to get as close to the goal as possible.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Wow. So, from Sanlam's perspective, what are key parts of the budget speech that we should know about? Things that actually impact like families' wallets. I know we've touched on it quite a bit, but maybe you can add on.
Yeah. So obviously, the audience are going to see this prior budget speech, but I think the fundamentals still apply from year on year, is that the budget speech has a knock-on effect in terms of what our RAND's buying power can do.
Yeah.
There are certain opportunities and there are certain threats. We need to understand the threats and we need to take advantage of the opportunities, right? Fundamentally, we need to realize that we have budgets are a goal. They're not a Bible. They're a goal. Mm. And we need to be flexible to see, this is my budget, this is my goal, and constantly review it. So that's what we want our listeners to understand, that we're trying to influence you to take that same pattern of behavior. If you're not already budgeting, start. If you have been budgeting already, how do we refine it? How do we improve it? Through things like understanding your money personality, through some of Sanlam's resources, which we'll touch on later.
Yeah.
You know, having tools and resources that can help you create scenarios to see, if I budget this way and use the money this way, what is the end result versus a different way?
Yeah.
What are the people who could partner with you? Our financial advisors, certain products that help you meet your goals. So those are all the things that Sanlam wants to help augment for our listeners so that the budget speech can make sense on a practical level.
That's nice. I'm going to ask you, that's nice. I like how you guys are doing it as an organization. I just watched the budget speech. I consumed it. I watched it with the eye that you told me to watch it in. That's why it's obviously done a lot. What's one actionable thing that I could do after consuming the budget speech? Just like one thing. I mean, it can be within any phase of the budget speech. Like a very simple thing, like one thing I can do immediately, like,
that's a big ask. So if I tell you to do one thing immediately, go onto our budget speech page that we curate for our clients so that it puts the resources in their hands. It will give them a summary of the key things that they need to know from the budget speech in a practical way. So the budget speech itself, the press release is like, Mr. Economist over here will be able to read it and explain it to you in detail, I'm sure. But for the rest of us, you just want the infographic. You want to know, how is my tax impacted? Where are my rebates? You know, what is the interest rates, things like that. You want to understand the syntax, any new taxes being imposed. So we have a resource for that. We have we have certain explainers, we'll have some of this content. Yeah. So all of that can give you an immediate bridging of your understanding. So the first thing you can do is go and check those resources.
Actually, what we'll do actually is that we'll put the link to that resource in the description so that if you guys are at home, you guys can actually engage it, because I think that's going to help people a lot.
I actually used to use those summaries for like projects in school. Yeah. Because it really isn't like easier way. They do it in tables, they do it in graphics, they do mini summaries and etc. Whereas if you read the budget, like budget speech, like the real budget, it's pages on pages of pages of economics and stuff.
Mm.
So,
Kudos
to you.
Let's go into love languages. So your budget has a love language. Definitely. I don't know if I should just give you this section because
you go into it, bro. Like,
okay, so I think we talk about love languages in relationships a lot. Yeah. We've done it on this podcast quite a number of times. I think first question, let me just ask you guys this. What are your guys' love languages? You can say the love language that you love receiving or you love giving or just two that you absolutely love.
So I'll go first because this one I know the answer.
What are the love languages? What are they actually for people watching?
We actually got it in this thing, bro.
Physical touch, words of affirmation, quality time, acts of service,
etc. I don't know. Oh yeah, I've got them. Yes.
What is like five?
It's five. Quality time, gifting, acts of service, self development, and comfort and well being. That's what we've got examples of.
Yeah.
But like, if we put into the context of like love languages and budgeting.
No, before that, but like, what's your love language in general?
Quality time. Quality time is my biggest one. And as you guys know, in South Africa, quality time requires money. Dating life, as we all know.
Oh, you're dating wrong, bro.
No, it requires money. Whether it's a pizza on Uber Eats or making stir fry, it requires money. So I'm very interested about this section because I'm going to literally just pound some questions towards you. But what about you? What are some of your love languages?
Yeah, I think... probably more the acts of service thing, but one a very specific act for me that I've seen in some of the greatest friendships that I've built is people who listen to me. Wow. Like, and I don't mean just hearing all the random words, but they pick up these like little things about me that sticks in their mind. It's a collection of arbitrary information that they have about me that nobody else has.
Wow. It's like a vault. It's like
a little vault of like my friends, the people who are closest to me know that my favorite chocolate is a top deck chocolate. There's no other chocolate. It's top deck chocolate.
Nothing can compete.
And there's even a specific ratio. The biggest slab has the right ratio of brown to white. So the people who know me know that, right? Yeah. That for me is a love language. Like to know me to that intimate, and you get that way by gathering all that data on me. So that for me is a really, really powerful love language. Yeah.
What would you say?
I say definitely quality time. Quality time and acts of service.
But we're the same person.
Did you say the same thing?
I should have just said copy paste.
Quality time and acts of service. But acts of service is not, like, not necessarily you doing like crazy things for me. I think it comes to like what you're saying, consideration. Mm. Like analyzing and seeing what I like and then just doing those things
responding naturally.
Like being responsive to what I enjoy. But of course, guys, like Lebo said, some love languages, if not all, do require some sort of finances.
Yeah.
Of course, you can take a walk. But I mean, if you're taking a walk, you even... taking away time to work, and time to work is low-key.
Money,
like,
time is money.
Yeah, it's money. Time is money, right? So how do you guys think, if somebody looked at your bank balance right now, would they say that your love language correlates to what you just said?
Wow. Like, would they say, I love myself the way I just said it?
Yeah, because you said it was quality time, acts of service.
Okay, I'm going to be honest. No, I don't think they'd say that, but I think they'd be like, Shave, he's working, he's trying. I like to have this ideology, right? That as we learn a skill, you're learning more to love yourself, especially with budgeting, right? Budgeting is the biggest, I have your own back. Like you have your own back, right? Mm. And I'm slowly learning that like to feed into my own like self-love languages and et cetera, I need to be able to budget for myself. Love, whether that's a small, guys, I love coffee. Right, I'm a bit of a caffeine addict. Yes, sure. Drink a cup every morning and sometimes at night. Oh, so sorry, guys. I know it's bad, but I love caffeine and I love a coffee made by others, not me.
Of course.
I don't love a coffee made by me. I love coffee made by others. And one of the things I really like is like off the gym, you know, like you have your quiet, etc., and you just try to get like a quick coffee. Mm. But that's a bit of a purchase every time. It's a purchase. So do I budget for that? You know, sometimes it's just like a passive purchase that I'm not even thinking of. But then when you look at the end of the month, I'm like, oh, I just bought 150 coffees. You know, that's not the real number, but I'm just trying to show you that like these passive purchases is me not loving myself because I'm like not putting it into my budget. You feel me?
Yeah, yeah.
which is where I want your advice, actually, because that's why I have like, yo, I'm so excited for this. I'm so excited for this. But yeah. You can actually answer the question. You can just repeat it.
Yeah, so I'm going to change it. So looking at your bank statement, yeah, what would your bank statement say you love?
Yeah, it would definitely show that I love my family or my friends even. It's always been, generosity has always been part of my growth strategy. I always feel like I'm more of a conduit for resources than I am a container. And as a conduit, I'll be in a constant state of flow. So things will come to me and go to the right things. And like, as long like as I set myself up for that, then I'll keep having what I need to provide for the people that I need, right? So if you see my bank statement, and before I started working, I said to one of my family members, when I get my job, I'm going to buy everyone gifts all the time. And she looked at me and she laughed at me like cynically. And she's like, not a chance. Mm. And you know what? 20 years later, I've stayed true to that. I'm very big on gifting.
How do we come into your inner circle?
I've already added on LinkedIn. You don't know me.
Like, I like it to be personal and a reflection of what I know about you. So if you look at my bank statement, you'll see that. And one step further, you'll see a ton of insurance stuff, right? Yeah. It's a bit much. I'm actually looking to see how I can like scale it down. But at the beginning, I wanted to make sure that I've cared for myself enough that nobody needs to worry about me. And then also I'm going to care for everybody else. So what can I leave behind? What is the legacy I'm creating? What are the resources that I have that I can tangibly give you? I can give you space to live in a house. I can give you money if you need it in an emergency. So that's what my budget reflects. And it was an aspirational state when I was around your age. It is a lived experience now, and hopefully it keeps expanding and I'll keep aligning that way.
I want to ask you, so like if I had to throw you back all the way back to the start of your career, right? And I said to you, like, what are some of the skills that got you to be here, like to be able to be that disciplined? What would you say? Such a big question, right? It's like basically asking you.
Yeah, no, it's a big question.
How'd you get your superpowers?
And I really want to answer that, but I don't want to miss the opportunity to hear if your bank statement reflects
So I think my bank statement doesn't showcase. It shows me that I don't love myself enough.
Yeah.
It shows that it's like I'm very similar to you. Like I am a vessel to give love. So my bank statement shows money towards my romantic partner, money towards my friend, money towards my siblings, money towards my parents, money towards my grandmother. And it's like, I wanted to also show
love to me.
Love to me. Yeah, I wanted to show love to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, which my follow-up question was, what happens when people don't budget for their well-being? But let's do that question. How did you get your superpower question?
Got two. Okay, I'm going to hold them very tightly and then give them. So, you know, the discipline actually came from challenging circumstances. So, I mean, lots of people can grow up in the same environments and have different outcomes, right? Mm. So I grew up in a state of poverty. I grew up in a community that were underprivileged, even from a literacy point of view. Mm. There wasn't a lot of educated people, there wasn't a lot of financial literacy, and there definitely weren't a lot of fit people. I think poverty tends to breed, you know, certain lifestyle apathies because you feel like you can't. Mm. And so there were lots of early deaths in the family, like heart attacks at 40. My dad died in his 40s with a heart attack. Sure. My mom died at 50, also natural causes. Yeah. You know, so watching those things, and I was like, I realized that it was probably more environmental than anything else. So I decided I needed a new picture, and then I had to create one for myself. Mm. And so every decision I made was to look at the things that I would like, admire those qualities in other people, and then aspire to them. And then I found that fundamentally all those things that I was aspiring to, the underlying thing is someone decided what they wanted to look like in any area, and then they worked for it. So that's where it came from. And then you keep refining it as you go, right? So
what a love letter to yourself. Like that commitment, that like, let me change my ecosystem. It's such like a huge love letter to yourself. You know what I mean? Like it's actually very inspiring. So I'm listening to you with awe. I'm like,
But that speaks to your thing, right?
Yes, yes.
So I didn't have the resources to give myself initially first, because my first responsibility when I matriculated was I needed to go work and provide for my family. No tertiary education, no self-actualization. It was provision.
Yeah.
So already. So it's easy to look at your bank statement in that scenario, like, how am I loving myself? But you know what? The responsibilities that I took and the way I aligned myself to grow into those responsibilities was, in essence, the way I was loving myself as well. Because the person I became in that process is so much bigger and grander than the person that was struggling in that time. Yeah. So yes, a lot of people got the benefit of that, but I loved myself enough to grow myself. And maybe that is what you're getting out of when you're looking at your bank statement.
Mm.
You know, so growth can look, or rewarding yourself doesn't necessarily always have to be a financial thing. Sometimes the way you grow yourself mentally is the most important part of it.
It's a nice perspective.
Yeah.
I'm going to start using
that. You actually really touched me there. Hey, I'm not going to lie. I think you even touched people in the bank. She's just there. Yeah, but you can ask your question.
So I feel like, okay, now I'm going to, let's pause on my question.
Wow. By the way, what you just said was so powerful.
I like what you just said. I want to actually touch on this. So, you basically spoke on how you had these mentors who you aspire to be like. Like, who were they? How did you find them? Like, were they online? Are they within your organization? Like, how do you find people to aspire?
That's a good question. And sometimes it's not, they weren't even mentors. I think if I had mentioned their names now, they won't even realize that that's what they were doing at the time for me. But it was more... So I know I'm going to sound like a fortune cookie where I said earlier that, you know, generosity is my core thing. Yeah. The other really core thing for me is like gratitude and appreciation.
Yeah.
The minute you see something nice in someone, I immediately appreciate that value. Like the minute I met the two of you, the friendliness, the warmth, the easy conversation, I appreciate that characteristic. And then I want to replicate it immediately. So that's how I see it. I see people as they have these qualities. Some of them are good, some of them are bad. And then I attach to those nice ones that I immediately admire.
Yeah.
And some people were a lot of those things to me, and they became inevitably mentors or aspirational things that I was telling him. He asked me, how did I get into fitness? And I said to him, it's because the lady who was doing my pedicure, her arm was busy scratching my leg, and this part of her arm was going. And now, coming from where I came, I never seen a bicep, not a man or a woman, like ever. And then I'm seeing this thing going up and down. I'm like, what is that? She's like, that is a bicep. I'm like, how did you get that? And she's like, oh, I train. And I'm like,
I want that.
I want one of those. And now I have that.
I'll take two.
Yes. One on each side.
I'll take two.
So that's how I got to that point, you know. So a lot of people are going to feel like you're never going to get those mentors.
Yeah.
You can just... Every time you come into contact with a characteristic or a thing that resonates with you, get consumed by it so that it becomes a part of you. And yes, there have been actual mentors. There have been people who, in the church, people who had jobs who gave me my first shot in corporate. I started as an administrator. I didn't have a driver's license. I didn't have skills. And here I am in the same industry, but heading up a whole part of a department, right? But that's through learning and following and taking every opportunity that was given to me and trying to make more of it than what it was when it was given to me. So that's that mindset as well.
That's nice. Yeah, I think there's so much power in like being exposed to things, but then when you're exposed to them, your eyes being open.
Yes.
Right? So being able to like absorb and see and take what you're learning from it. Because like, for example, when you saw the bicep, you're like, oh, I actually like biceps.
Yeah. Let me go get it.
And it's like, it was similar with me with like music in high school. So see someone playing the piano, I'm like, I want to be able to do that thing. So it's about like being able to experience life and then take it.
And
it's
the same with
budgeting, bro. Just learning in general,
I think this is actually such a powerful moment that we can actually talk to the viewers now and say that you guys should comment down what you hope and aspire to have or to, and so we can just all just like it and support you and give you that positive energy because as we hear, like really our mind is our greatest asset, you know what I mean? And we are capable of anything that we put our minds to. So guys, please comment down what you guys are hoping to, you know, aspire to, whether it's improving your budgets, whether it's getting your first big boy patches. Or maybe
being a content creator.
Or maybe two biceps and a great job. Just comment down right now.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So I think since we're speaking about the biceps, let's go into your powerlifting story because I'm really curious about it.
Because that's a big discipline. Like it's a huge discipline. It requires, I mean, we were speaking off cam and she was telling me that she trains, you said six times a week. And I wish I asked her first because she asked me and I said three. I wish I waited for her answer and be like, I train like all the time. But you said six times. I asked you this off camera, but I want to ask you here. How did you develop the discipline to just, because you guys, I need you guys to understand, when you're at gym, it hurts. It's painful. It's uncomfortable. Yeah. It can take a toll on you body-wise. You get tired after. But how do you constantly tell yourself, let me go again?
Yeah. Maybe I take one step back now. This is another one of those random personal moments, right? But when I was like early 20s, probably just hit my 20s. I was really sick and I was in hospital, and I was in hospital for 2 weeks, and they thought I had colon cancer, actually.
Sure. What?
And I was busy being probed and tested and going for these enemas and gastroscopes and all of those things. And every one of those tests was super uncomfortable. I felt having all those things. And one of the doctors who was putting me in one of the machines, he said to me, you know what? Just learn to endure. Like, it'll make it a lot easier if you can just endure this discomfort. It's for a little bit, but the more you react to the discomfort, the worse it's going to be.
Wow.
Right? A random moment, I was unconscious after that, and then, but it stuck, right? And then I realized that we often are afraid of the uncomfortable things, but getting through that is probably the most really important thing for you. And so I applied that philosophy for everything. Secondly, it's not discipline. It's like you make a decision that you want something, and the wanting it is the first step. The road to getting it is the second step, right? And the road to getting it means certain actions that I have to take. Those actions become almost non-negotiable in the first part of it. If I wanted a bicep, it is not going to happen overnight. I built it for years. It only started showing probably by like year 8. For the first few years, people are like, do you train? I'm like, dude, I train every day. You know?
Yeah.
So the road it's a non-negotiable. It's not a discipline. It's like my day job. When people ask me, why do you go to the gym every day? It's my day job. I go to work between these hours. I go to gym between these hours. It's my day job.
Yeah.
And that's how I get my paycheck. I get my muscles, my mental relief, everything.
Yeah.
So the discipline is actually a byproduct of consistent, repeatable actions towards a specific outcome.
Wow.
Right? There's no such thing as discipline.
Wow.
It only shows up as discipline after you've done it multiple times. And you do it multiple times because you have to. You have no other choice. Yeah. So
do you think that mirrors in financial planning?
100%. And that was also why fitness became one of the fundamentals that shaped the way I handle everything else. So I never came from means. I never came from aesthetic genetic lotteries.
Yeah.
Like, you know, some people are just built really well or whatever. Yeah. But I was like, hey, if I do what I can with what I have, eventually I'll land at a place of abundance, and I'll take that abundant thing and do what I can and make it more. And so I applied that same philosophy to everything. So even financially now, where I am now, I've aspired to be debt-free. I do have big boy purchases and everything else. And when people look at those things, that lifestyle creep will slip in and think, oh, I want that. But the road
to get
that I took there, it wasn't me sacrificing my future self for a present thing. It was building the future self through all the right behaviors. And that's why it filters through to things like finances, to the way I treat my house, like my order at home even.
Yeah.
Because I'm so disciplined with my eating and my training, even my routine in making my bed and showering and sleeping, everything is the way it is.
But I think there's so much power. I was telling him, there's so much power in routine.
Yeah. Like, it's a gift.
We need routine.
But you've got to self-impose it, right? Nobody can make you do that.
Nobody can.
I mean, my husband will watch me do it every day and he will never do it. Never do it. He's late every day. He's like, because nobody can make, when he decides, then it will change his life, you know?
Yeah.
So
I think I'm going to use you because you're here for myself right now.
That's what I've been doing.
So I'm someone who has been like very intentional about budgeting, right? But my biggest issue for years is that my budgeting was like up here, in here, right? It wasn't on paper or on any Excel sheets. Now I've been trying to take it from here to there. But I've been like trying to prevent lifestyle. What's it called? When you increase your lifestyle, when income increases.
The lifestyle creep, yeah.
Lifestyle creep, yeah. Let's mention it now. I've been trying to prevent that thing by all costs, and I've been preventing it really well. But now, because I'm so accustomed to preventing it, I'm just struggling to get myself things that I think I now deserve. So my question to you is, how do you get over that, one? And then two, when should somebody feel like they're ready to get themselves a new home, a new car, those big boy purchases?
That's
in
a
life?
Very good question. Firstly, I mean, you're saying you're struggling to get over it. Maybe you're at the point where you don't even feel like you need to get over it. Because let's be honest, if we're ever really convicted about something we want to do, we do it no matter what people tell us, right?
Yeah.
Dating the wrong person, wasting the money. No matter what people tell us, we would do it anyway. Yeah. So if we get to a point of hesitation after we know better, we don't have to revert to our first choice. We realize that we've changed our perspective because we've grown.
Yeah.
So if you feel like you get to a point where I've got the 1 million rand, but I don't need the 1 million rand car, that's also okay. Wow. Now, a very real example hitting home, I bought my car. This is one of the cars that I wanted really, really badly a couple of years ago. So it was a state of actualization. It's so cool. It's sporty. It's everything, right? Yeah. Then I got to a point where like, okay, I don't owe anything on the car. I'm sitting with a couple of $100,000 just in the driveway. It's stupid. Mm. I should sell it because I can actualize that money and get rid of the car. Somebody decided they wanted to buy it. And then suddenly I'm like, I don't want to sell this car anymore. And my husband's like, no, but you said you were going to buy something small. And then suddenly I'm like, no, I don't want to sell it anymore. Because when you know, you know, you know.
Yeah.
You might have a thought, but when you know, you know. So you can also trust that you've evolved and then your future, your current self, based on what you know, is now responding to an old thought. So that is also okay. So you don't necessarily even have to make a big boy purchase.
Yeah.
You have the money and that is cool.
Yeah.
You look at people that are really wealthy, like Steve Jobs and everything, and they always wear these non-branded clothes and everything. And maybe it's cliche. Maybe they're being ironic. But on the other hand, maybe they just, those things just really make a difference, right?
Yeah.
And I think the more secure you become in your financial state, the less you worry about these physical purchases.
Yeah.
Because all those aspirational things like your car and your clothing and your house and stuff, those are, they keep you motivated so you can earn more and it makes you feel like you've arrived. But once you've arrived past that, they become redundant and it's a natural process, natural order of things.
Yeah. I think I like the fact that you're saying that I must trust the new version of myself, because the new version of myself keeps saying like, okay, cool. Like you drive this car, right? You wanted this other car years ago, but now you value cash flow more.
Yeah.
Like now you value being able to go to a restaurant and spend a ridiculous amount of money on that. Or you value traveling, or because I value having money, because I'm like, okay, cool. I'm going to buy this car. Now I'm going to lose 14K, but it's like, I want to have 14K to do things.
Yes.
Because I prefer like doing things.
Yeah. Now, the nice thing, because look at what you just said, right? You have the money, but you don't necessarily want to buy it. Yeah. So now you're in the state of, I can, but I don't want to. Versus the people who are in the state of, I really like to, but I can't. But once you get to the point where you can and you don't want to, you've arrived.
I've arrived.
I'll give you a clap. It's a mini clap.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Let's hop into hidden money habits that we don't speak about, right? So I believe that we all have hidden money habits that we don't talk about. And I think sometimes we're not even aware of them, right? And a lot of the time, these hidden money habits are actually quite negative.
Yeah.
Like with me, and I won't even say the brand's name, but for me, it was ordering food from an app, right? That was like a money habit, because I put all of my bank statements into like an AI software. I'm like, dude, tell me what am I doing wrong?
Yeah.
And they were like, bro, like,
yeah, same.
You're buying a lot of food, right? And I was like, yo, that's so real. And I haven't spent more than 500 rand this year on buying food online, which is amazing.
It is to you, yeah.
So what's something you know that you shouldn't spend on, but you still do?
I'll go first. It's definitely data. Oh my goodness. Like I am such a bad, like I don't mind if I see my phone do that, like you know that loading thing, I'll buy a gig. I don't know.
Like if you're on Wi-Fi.
Like even if it's on Wi-Fi.
You don't want to be unconnected.
Yeah, and it's like slow, I immediately buy data. And I've realized that I actually buy so much unnecessary data, because you must understand it's like a double purchasing a little bit, because you also pay for Wi-Fi, but now you're also paying for data.
Yeah.
So that's one of my ones. I'm really just trying to say like, yo, you need to slow down on that one.
Yeah.
Just as an example, I don't know if you have one also. Get you like, yo, a passive. Because these are the passive ones that we don't pick up until, until it's the end of the month.
But we know that we just don't mind spending on them.
Yeah.
But like, they're lingering.
Yeah.
Yeah. Look. This is
come on,
it's so embarrassing, but it's so revealing, right? And the audience are going to not be able to reconcile this. But I have a separate fridge in the house.
Yeah.
What? So you put what? Put what?
What would you think?
Okay, I'm thinking now, thinking lifestyle, I'm thinking maybe meat. It's just meat.
Yeah, like meat.
Just meat in it.
I do buy a lot of meat. That's fundamental, right?
But that's
like,
but
this, maybe fruits, maybe like you do smoothies.
So that's what I'm saying. The audience are going to be like, what? I have a whole fridge of chocolates.
What? That is the biggest self-love I've ever had in my life.
Wait, so how often are you eating chocolates in a week?
I eat chocolate every day, but it's like fit into whatever I'm allowed to eat.
Like your calorie
point of view, right? Okay. But it's more that I, my
That's so cool, actually.
That is so cool. Really cool. You know, I used to, when I was younger, I used to want to have like the bar fridge filled with like, what is it called? Powerades or etc. Because I used to like see people like in the shows.
It's like you've arrived.
Yeah.
That's so cool. That's actually really cool, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, so whenever I travel, if I go to any store and there's a chocolate I've not seen or I'd really like to try, I buy it. Then I buy it, not just one, I buy it because I think Tato's going to like it, Lebo's going to like it. Now my fridge is full of all these chocolates. And even the other day when I was doing my husband and I were doing like financial planning, thinking about legacy, and I was like, yo, if I die, you guys are going to have to unpack this. Maybe a better use of it is to start giving it to people like now, because there's a whole fridge with just chocolates. Like, and if I actually have to calculate the money I've spent in euros and dollars and what to get these chocolates, so I can eat the one block and then put it in the fridge. It's wild. It's bad.
Like 5% of your net worth.
But it's so linked to what we're talking about, our love languages and etc. And that, even though, you know, you seeing it as like, oh no, it's such an embarrassing thing, I see it as like, that's one of your hobbies. You know what I mean? It's a hobby that you invest in. You know what I mean? Yeah. Not all of our hobbies are going to look like, I game, for example, and I know that gaming sometimes takes away from my energy, but it's something I enjoy.
Yeah, it's your mental decompression.
Yes.
To help our audience, what do you think are some silent mistakes South African households are making, like every single day, every single week?
A lack of awareness of where the money's going. Yeah. I think that's fundamental. People will have a budget, but like you said, you take your bank statement and you drop it into AI, and then even AI is like, dude. And you are like, dude. So true. Because you both are coming to an awareness all of a sudden, right? Yeah. And I think we've seen that all along. Even budgeting in theory is nice, but the practice is, are you checking all the time that you're doing what you said you're going to do?
Yes.
And a lot of South Africans don't correlate their little taps and their little wireless spends to what their budget said they were going to do.
Yeah.
And I mean, we have to give ourselves room for error. It's human. But then constantly check so you can correct, right? And I think a lot of us are not doing that second part.
When you say constantly check, like for you, what is like constantly checking?
I check every... Actually, I'm bad. I check like once a week sometimes.
Okay.
Because also, I don't want anybody to just come in and randomly debit order something that shouldn't be debit ordering. Yeah. So I check. Yeah. And then because I have multiple bank accounts all linked to one profile, right, so I can manage my money through money coming in and where it needs to go, I go and check that it's when it's gone where it should have gone, and it's still right with the part where money's coming out.
You don't trust these banks?
No, I'm doing my diligence.
Doing your diligence. Your diligence.
You know, because you can't blame an institution if you're not making sure you've done yours.
100%.
She's got her effector point.
Yes. Thank you. We're going to get to the effector. Yes. It's not just my name. It's not just Bazana, by the way. I got the effector. But yeah, I can't go blame anyone if I didn't check. So I check. I think South Africans should, don't be as compulsive as me, maybe, but check.
Yeah.
Check your bank charges, check your little, even the app that you're using to buy your food, you know, like there's a fee. And then depending on how far the places that you're buying from, you're paying
different delivery fees,
different admin fees, whatever. Then buy the thing, but buy where you pay less fees, where it's in the Uber One. Yeah.
Or the One. It's okay.
The One. Where it's in your like bundle fee and then you're like not paying anything. There's smarter ways to do it.
Yeah.
Like, you know?
Sorry, because I was buying food online and I saw like delivery fees and then it said other fees. And then it was like small order fees. I'm like, what do you mean I'm paying more because it's small? What are you saying?
I don't play. I'm on the One. Yeah. I'm on the One. I don't play. Yeah.
Me too.
But I'm curious. So since you spoke about this effect, what is this effect you guys are speaking about? I know it's a thing from Sunlam, but can you please unpack it for us?
She is I.
What is the effect?
It's this this energy, this confidence that a person has if they have a handle on their money.
Yeah.
You know, the way they show up in terms of their money and their money personality, their awareness of their finances. So that's the effect. So the Sunlam campaign, our biggest one was the F word, because we found that South Africans were averse to speaking about finance. It was a dirty word. So it was the F word, right? So you're avoiding it.
You came up with that. That's amazing.
It's clever.
That's a great conversation. That's a nice hook.
So it's not a dirty word. It's a conversation we should be having. Mm. Secondly, for those people who are having it and who are aware, they have this F factor.
Yeah.
This thing that makes them, you know,
but this financial confidence.
Yeah, they kind of know. And they're not saying that they know it all. but they're putting themselves in a position to say, I want to know it all. I want to do it all. I want to get there. And that speaks to the effect.
Yeah. Can we just take a moment? Audience, can we get into our effect? Like after this podcast, everybody, we all time, because it is our month of awareness, right?
Yeah.
For us. And we've been talking about all things like awareness, like emotions, etc. But I think this is one of the most important conversations, because with financial education, it allows you to be a bit more comfortable. You can even express yourself better. When you're under financial strain, life is just hitting you on different levels. You know what I mean?
Mm. I feel like you can save so many years, like with financial like literacy. You can actually, like, I'm talking years.
Bro. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Sorry, I had to say that. Like, can we please get into our F factor? Like, I'm getting into it now. I was on an L factor. L for loser. But now I'm on the F factor now.
Yeah. You know, we're all going to be, all the South Africans walking around all puffed up in blue.
The economy's doing great now.
We're all like, I am not at the mercy of the economy, brother. I am, I'm hacking this system.
Let's talk about budgeting for the future, right?
Yeah.
So how does that look like for you guys? Like, what are you guys currently doing right now to budget for your future?
Oh, this is not one you want to.
This one I'm on
when you're like, not sure. Okay.
Not today.
Not the kids you spoke about, the school fees.
Okay, I've recently fell in love, you know? So that
recently.
That's informing you.
Like a year and a half.
And with that new relationship, you know, these questions of the future start happening, you know? Yeah. Like, when you're going to get a house together, if you're going to get married, all these you know, these financial implications that in the future, you don't feel them now. Yeah. Like, this is very important what I'm saying. Like, you don't feel them right now. Like, but it is coming. It's kind of like I like to picture like a guy on a motorcycle, like running after me. It's like, you're going to get married. So you're going to have money, or you're not going to have money. So I've been trying to, obviously, besides saving for myself and my future and et cetera, save for the things I'm going to care about in the future, which has been, still need to get the right pattern of saving, I'm just trying to figure it out slowly, you know what I mean?
It's beautiful, actually. Yeah. And it's quite encouraging to know that someone who's so young and so far away from that actual state is already giving a thought.
Yeah.
And, you know, speaking to some of the Sanlam campaigns, I mean, why we're here is also because of research that we've done recently. But some of the research we did prior that informed the F factor and all of that was that a lot of people couldn't picture their future selves, and therefore they weren't preparing their finances to align to their future self, and they're also struggling with their present needs versus their future self. So how are we budgeting for taking care of what we need now versus the version of myself that's going to need me in 10, 15, 20 years? And that's where people are struggling to create that balance. So it's good to see that you've already stepped into your F factor.
I'm trying. I'm in the mindset, guys. Like I said, I'm going from L factor to F factor quick.
You're moving.
I'm trying.
And you know, one of the things that's clear is that the minute you have something to live for outside of yourself, it brings out a version of you that is different, right? Because now you're in love, and then it's making you think about my next. And so that's quite important.
Yeah. Mindset, it's like it all derives from mindset and like where you are in your life. But I will admit, like, as you said that, I was just like, wow, that's so true. Like, I did struggle seeing my future self. What does that person have? Because obviously you are so overwhelmed by the present. Mm. And it just gets to you every day. Yeah. But it's so important to just know that there is more coming. You know what I mean?
And I think, you know, if you living in the present moment, sometimes the present can be overwhelming, where the future can give you something hopeful and something to work toward, right?
Yeah.
So that's why it's so important to budget for that future self and manage your present self. Now, in our recent research, we found that people are budgeting, but they're doing it very much as a defensive strategy to protect themselves based on the risks that they're facing now. And they are, you know, really trying to make their budgets work for them in terms of meeting their basic needs and then making sure their children's education, which is a fundamental thing because it's a pillar of hope to give the next generation something.
Sure.
So, you know, those are all the areas in which people are budgeting for, but under duress because it's a strenuous thing.
Yeah.
So they're not necessarily able or capable to give themselves something to look forward to in their budget for their future selves. And what they're doing with their budget is giving themselves those little morale-boosting purchases like their coffees and making sure they have data or their streaming services because it's giving them that little mental escape from the stresses right now. So they're budgeting for those reliefs right now. So you can understand all of that in context. But that reframing where you start to look at something hopeful in the future will help you to say, okay, yes, I need my subscription now because it gives me relief. But that money for a very defined purpose in the future is not only going to give me relief, it's going to give me a whole other outcome. Mm. I'm never going to have this limited budget again, so I'm going to bite my bullets now and have a whole different future. So it's managing those perspectives as well.
Oh, yeah. That's really nice, yeah.
What's this like?
I even have my team, they're not even working anymore. They're all just...
They're all just like...
Because
<this.
laughs> there's like... I hear you, but there's this like... There's this thing that always hurts me because like I think we all have this mindset that's like, I'm sacrificing the now. Mm. And I don't think it really is the case. It's like...
It's a trade-off, dude.
It's a trade-off. It's like you're trying to live even more. You know what I mean? And I think that's what you're trying to say. And I'm just digesting what you're just saying.
No, for sure. And I mean, you show your understanding if you can play it back
right? Yes, yeah, yeah.
But it's exactly it. It's not... It feels like a sacrifice now. But it is, like you said, it's a trade-off. But it's also, it's the same as the grit that it takes to build muscle or the grit that it takes to go through a painful procedure or whatever it is. Mm. It's going, biting the bullet or making the difficult decision because the version of you that's going to exist now. So you should most look forward to that. Yeah. It's not a sacrifice. It's an evolution. It's the cocoon vibes. Yeah. That's like what's going to come out next is going to be a better version than what's going in right now, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that. I like that. So I've been, sorry. I'm also digesting it.
The glasses. Yeah,
he's a big crier and he acts like he's not. He's emotionally so touched. He's like, oh, it's my eyes.
It is my
eyes. No, he's seeing his future self, guys. Just give him a moment.
Like, I'm even going to, like, I know it sounds crazy, but I'm even going to rewatch this podcast because I feel like there's so many different layers into budgeting, mindset, emotion, future self, but present self.
I just wanted to just like pin that point because budgeting is not just a practical exercise. Mm. It is an emotional and physical thing, right? The choices you're making impact you emotionally. They have a knock-on consequence. They create physiological experiences, the stress, the anxiety and everything. So if you can become smarter with how you do that, then the consequence is that you are stronger mentally, you're stronger physically. So...
I think I'm going to spend a lot of time unpacking like those sides of budgeting because I've always looked at budgeting like, how do I budget the best? Mm. But I feel like if I understand my emotions associated to like the trade-offs and everything, I think I will do significantly better.
For sure.
So thank you for that. Okay, so we'll be speaking about budgeting for the future. So we asked everybody, I asked you guys actually to do this. I did not do this. I asked because I'm the host today. I asked them to write a letter to their...
I think it was like...
Future,
What did you do?
You guys, so you gave me the homework, that's it.
I have mine right here. Like, I just want to see if I did it right, though. I'll copy your homework a little bit.
Lucky I'm one of those students who likes to do a homework.
So, you wrote a letter to your future self. About how they've budgeted for you, basically.
The budget, the version of me that budgeted now.
Yeah.
You know, why would my future self appreciate what...
Wow, yeah, okay, good.
Then you wrote
I'm similar.
That was the brief.
Yeah.
Who did you write to?
I wrote basically the same thing.
Okay,
same
awesome.
Thing, yeah, same vibe.
Okay, awesome. Okay, so...
And you wrote nothing. I just want to make sure everybody knows he wrote nothing.
You're going to freestyle. You're going to freestyle based on what you know now.
I did. Here, so I wrote here.
You got a straw man.
Savings.
It says savings.
You put his name on the page for marking.
So you can go for it first.
No, in case I got it wrong. Okay, but something similar. So I said, dear level, saving for your future saving for your future is important because it represents more than financial discipline. It's an act of self-love to yourself and empowerment. I hope that when I choose to secure myself, I secure my future family, I secure my future love interests, and I secure everybody that I trust with a foundation of trust and resilience. Having my own back is something that I cannot trade off. It's a commitment that I hope that you will continuously make, and it reflects the deep care that you hold for yourself and those you love. I hope that everything you're saying is a milestone that you reach really, 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 really soon. And just a reminder that your strength and reflection and the love that you carry should reflect in the budget that you hold.
Wow.
This is just a dedication for yourself and to continue to affirm yourself that things do get better with time.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is beautiful.
Thank you. I'm a bit of a poet.
Now, how did you write that in the absence of everything we spoke about? It's like you already knew everything we spoke about.
What did you say? I can't wait to cry. Hold on.
I was not nearly as deep.
Okay.
In my old age, it's just practical. But I was, so there are very specific things that I've now started to budget for. So yeah. I wrote based on that.
Yeah.
So I was like, future me, I am budgeting today because I'm aware now that my time is the most valuable asset that I have. And I refuse to spend it forever in service of debt.
Wow.
My biggest flex isn't what I can buy now, but the freedom I'm building for us. The goal to be entirely debt-free and to own our retirement home by the time we hit 45. I am choosing to be intentional with every rand today so that by 50, we aren't working because we have to, but because we want to, supported by income-generating assets that give us the ultimate luxury of choice. I'm also investing in our pivot fund. I'm a girl, emotion.
I might copy-paste this is my prayer tonight, but yeah.
I'm also investing in our pivot fund. I'm budgeting for the skills and education that we need now so that at 50, we can walk away from a corporate world and transition into consulting on our own terms in an area that showcases the expertise we will then have. Mm. I want you to look back and know that I didn't just manage our money. I used it as a tool to design a life where work is a passion, not a requirement. This budget is the blueprint for our transition.
Wow. Like I said, I'm going to peace in that so I can use that as a prayer tonight.
Yeah, that is very powerful.
Because that's extremely powerful. Eh? Yeah. It's kind of like, I love this exercise, kind of like manifesting. And then the person who didn't do their homework?
Yeah.
I'm not going to freestyle because this seems like it's very difficult. But dear future self, we're still going.
And we still try.
And we're still trying. And we got it. And we're going to own our own time even more in the future.
One of the things that you and I were talking about is that the minute you put something out there, you gotta hold yourself accountable, yeah, right? So now we've just read
the most
like revealing things. And, you know, people are gonna watch to see if we've done that, and I think it puts that pressure that we need to make sure we do what we need. So when I wrote this, it wasn't child's play for me because I realized now between now and then, there's a lot of things that I'm probably gonna have to do that are gonna be super uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But I mean. Yeah. This is my manifesto now, right? Yeah. So I've got to align to it. Yeah.
Wow. Awesome. So I want to read something in closing because we are done. This has been amazing. So the national budget speech may feel distant and technical, but its impact is personal. It affects our homes, our groceries, our school fees, and our futures. Financial confidence is built through planning, not by chance. Behind every budget are people, and every small choice today shapes tomorrow. If you guys are uncertain about the budget speech, you guys can visit, you guys can go and see some of Sanlam's tools and tips. The link is in the bio, but if you are someone that likes typing after someone speaks, it's www.sanlamonline.co.za/campaigns/national-budget. But the link is in the description and in the comment section. I hope that this episode has given you guys some clarity.
It has.
I know it's helped me a lot. I really appreciate your time. Thank you for this hour with you. I think it's so rare to be with someone that is so experienced and has lived the life that we want to live and has done the things we want to do. Because it's like that advice, it's not just based off of like a textbook. It's been applied. So I really appreciate it. Thank you guys for engaging the conversation. I think everybody at home is very, very happy that you were here. So thank you. Thank you.
I also just want to say... thank you. Thank you for showing us that, like, it's possible. I know it's so, like, overwhelming to be seen as a blueprint, but, like, this, guys, is an example that it is possible.
Yeah.
She's an example that is possible, and I hope that we can just take that into our hearts and get into our F factor.
Yeah, 100%. So we can stand in confidence. And thank you. Also, thank you for, like, teaching us about, like, the emotional sides of, like, budgeting. I really appreciated that. And I also really appreciated, like, how you kind of explained discipline when it comes to powerlifting and the things that you're doing, because I feel like I can apply those things when it comes to like me working, me being with my team, and those are things that I'm really trying to improve on. So I appreciate it.
This is it.
Thank you. Please subscribe, guys. Thank you for watching this episode of C-Tip, guys. If you guys do not know, we do post on Spotify and Apple Podcasts too. We drop the audio early, so if you guys are excited to see the next episode Monday, we are alive. Otherwise, we'll see you guys next week Wednesday on YouTube. It's you. See it, see it, see it, see it, see it, see it.